This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
The world isn't wide enough. Get immersed in the expansive views of the 48-inch customizable panoramic display in the all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid. Explore more at Lincoln.com. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football preview 2022 extravaganza team specific podcast, UNLV. That's a lot of words, Matt, to say we're talking about MWR.com and the Rebels this week.
Well, you got to start somewhere, right?
We do. And we apologize if you've been listening to these in order. We've had some scheduling stuff going on, but we're back. Get ready. Camps have started at this point. So there's a little bit of news for you, UNLV, not the best, but. This is our preview 10 of 12. We'll have today UNLV, obviously, New Mexico, San Jose State coming up. Then we'll have like the season's here, Matt. We are in August for football. Games are like less than three weeks away.
Yeah, and you know, with these team previews and with our mega preview coming down the pipe, we will make sure that we've got you absolutely covered with every team, discussion on every team before week zero.
Heck yeah. All right, so we'll drop it in with the Rebels here, UNLV. Marcus Arroyo is back for another year. And if we go back to last year, the big key, if you listen to most of our podcast, our previews, and just throughout the offseason, UNLV wasn't necessarily a bad team last year. They were unlucky with some injury stuff, but also they had too many games that were one possession or less, and they lost them all. And that's a problem.
It really kind of depends on how you look at the season. And I was thinking about, you know, how to sort of reflect on 2021 in particular. And I was sort of struck by the phrase. So what I came up with was, you know, was it more of the same old song or was there actually real progress? And honestly, I think it was sort of in between because you're still talking about a team that went 2-10, 2-6 in the Mountain West, excuse me. You know, you mentioned their bad luck in close games. They were 0-6 in games decided by 8 or fewer points. But it wasn't like we've talked about with a couple of other teams where, and I think it was with Colorado State in particular, we talked about how they blew a number of fourth quarter leads late and had these really catastrophic things. I mean, there were shades of that with the Rebels. There was some really questionable play calling at certain junctures of the game. I think most notably against San Jose State in particular, you know, they had a chance to tie, I believe, against UTSA before a game-ending interception. You know, they came up just short in overtime against Eastern Washington. But when you take a step back and look at how the team actually performed, like you could also make the case they were lucky just to be in that many close games because they were still 115th by SP Plus overall, 117th on offense, 104th on defense. They were still in the triple digits in net points per drive.
Yep.
They were in the triple digits nationally by available yards percentage per drive. So they were 107th in the former, 114th in the latter. So, and if you just think in terms of like traditional statistics, you know, look no further than what they did on defense last year. They were still dead last in the Mountain West in yards per play allowed, 6.15. Although, ironically enough, that was actually their best per play average since 2016.
Yikes.
You know, they weren't terribly explosive on offense. The only team in the conference that had fewer 20-yard plays was New Mexico, which we'll talk more about later on in the summer. They also had the second most 20-yard plays allowed on defense. So, like, I get what you're saying, but I think the truth is actually a lot more nuanced than that. But when you sort of turn the page looking forward to 2022, you know, now all of a sudden you're looking at a roster that has brought in, you know, any number of new, you know, recruits from the transfer portal, from another very strong recruiting class. You know, according to Bill Connolly and his returning production metric, you know, this is a team that is returning 76% of what it accomplished last year. So despite the fact that they're working with a new offensive coordinator and a new defensive coordinator, Nick Holes and Keith Hayward on both sides of the ball, like, really the excuses are fewer and farther between as they're looking for a breakthrough. But the, you know, at least from my perspective, and we'll get more into this as we get into talking about each of these position groups, like, there's a lot of peril in the path forward, and it could break in a number of different ways.
There are. And like, just one last thing, last year, quarterback play was all over the place due to not necessarily playing bad. They weren't great, but injuries. Brumfield got hurt, Cam Frill, and he played the bulk of the game. Justin Rogers will get to transferred, but they had so many guys who got in and out for injuries that it was hard to build a consistent type of offense. Cause you know, if your quarterback's changing every couple of games, I know Frill was the starter for their two wins at New Mexico and Hawaii. Their only two wins all year. He could be starting, but that was, I remember we joked during half of it last year, half the games when they're playing, where they came in versus San Diego State when Rogers came in and played pretty good in that second half. And then next week was Air Force. He fell flat. That's kind of how it was for some of these games. Guys came in off the bench where they like, well, the team doesn't really know them. He's got the adrenaline going and they just want to basically go out and make plays. I don't know, maybe a game or two different if they had consistent quarterback play, but now they're still at the middle of camp or the midst of a, not middle, but start of camp, like quarterback competition with Cam Frill, Brumfield, and a Tennessee transfer who is Harrison Bailey coming in. So, and Frill nearly transferred or was, no, sorry, Brumfield basically put his name in the portal for a week and then came back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, you're thinking of Brumfield who went to the transfer portal.
Is that what I said? Did I say Brumfield?
You said Frill, I believe.
Oh, apologies. Sorry. I was staring at Cam Frill. Sorry, Brumfield. My mistake. You're correct on that.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the quarterback situation is sort of a microcosm of exactly what I'm talking about with regards to there being so many possibilities. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this is not totally dissimilar from the exact same question that I feel like we talked about at this time last year. You know, between Rogers and Brumfield, and then all of a sudden there was Tate Martell in there for a second.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, it's really difficult to figure out how to parse this particular situation just because everybody offered something a little bit different over the last couple of years. Like, case in point, you know, we talked about, you mentioned Frill. He was the freshman of the year in the conference last year.
Yeah, he played quite well.
And he did set a program record for completion rate by a true freshman, 62.4%. His biggest problem was that he made way too many backbreaking mistakes from week to week. You know, he had a 4.9 interception rate that was way too high to offset what was a pretty reasonable yards per attempt average, 7.1. And, you know, the 6 touchdowns that he did have against the 11 total interceptions. But then you remember, like, during the course of the season, he wasn't the first person that they turned to.
Nope.
That was actually Brumfield. When Rogers was ineffective in the opener against Eastern Washington, Brumfield was the one who brought them back. You know, he, I believe, got the start against Arizona State. And then, you know, injuries sort of cut into his season from there.
Back injury, yeah.
So, but, you know, he flashed as a runner and he made a couple of nice throws against, you know, a pretty decent Sun Devil defense. But, you know, does having entered the transfer portal for that brief time, does that hurt his chances to claim the quarterback one job? And then you have Bailey, who, you know, he didn't play at all last year as Tennessee really took off with Hendon Hooker at quarterback. But he did, you know, appear in 7 games during his time with the Volunteers. He did make 3 starts at the end of 2020. And it wasn't like those starts were gimmies either. He played against 2 ranked teams down the stretch that year, Florida and Texas A&M, you know, performed pretty well. So, like, you know, this is one of the major questions that I think could determine a lot across the Mountain West. So, like, if the choice was yours to make, who would you start?
Oh, man, it's, I don't know, because and they also have a true freshman looking at it as well. It's always funny when you hear Coach speak. Coach Roy is like, this is the most bestest ever. Use your adjective to insert the most awesome quarterback room ever. I'm like, dude, you're UNLV. Get over yourself. You're trying to bring people up. He's like, we got competition. We got competitive quarterback room. I guess here's the direct quote. Let me get it correct here. We've got as competitive as a quarterback room as I've seen in a long time. That doesn't mean good. That just means they're probably about the same. You're trying to figure out who's it going to be. And so I know that he also likes Jaden Maeva, I believe, from Liberty High School. I believe that's a local
freshman, right?
Yeah, freshman. I probably, because it looked like during, I was reading up a little bit, a few things when I said the transfer portal for half a second. It looked like the guy from Tennessee, like, entrenched his backup, but I would got to say the guy who played last year. They bring the guy from Tennessee because if you're, oh, he went to Tennessee, played a couple games. He's Power 5 guy. It's like, but yeah, he transferred for a reason. And no offense to Rebels, but you transferred to UNLV. It's not like he's transferring to a program that's higher aspirations at this point in the school's trajectory. And he probably thought, I'm going to come in here and start right away. And if he doesn't come in and win the job, which it doesn't seem like it, because after, I don't know if it's coach speak or not, but you think if he's the guy, you'd want to showcase, like, hey, he's our guy going into the fall camp. But now it's, I don't know, man, probably Cam Friel. He started the most last year. He showed the most, I think, because he played. I know Brumfield got injured, but Friel, that UTSA game, over 300 yards. He had four games with over 200 plus yards. So why not go with him, who he's played enough on this team, and him and Kyle Lim, receiver Williams there, who had 200 something yards versus me, it's Charles Williams, my bad. Let's look at something else here. Mistakenly same name. But point being, go with the guy who played, got your two wins, right? Nobody else on this roster has a victory starting quarterback, right? Why not go with him?
Well, not with the Rebels anyway. Like I said, Bailey
just say, hey,
three games with Tennessee.
That's not UNLV, is it though?
No.
I would lean
Doug thing too. Like, you know, they're all, and it's not like they're all the same kind of quarterback either, which sort of compounds the problem. Yeah. It's like, what do you ultimately want your offense to look like? Because the sense that I get is that, you know, Brumfield is the one who offers the most with his legs as sort of a dual threat quarterback. You know, Friel has a little bit of mobility, but he's sort of the in between. And then Bailey is more of the drop back, you know, and throw down the field type passer. He's the least mobile of the three, at least as far as I understand.
Yeah.
So
what
elements of their skill set are you ultimately looking to incorporate in your offense as a whole? Because, you know, if you go in there and you make the wrong decision and the first guy is ineffective, then all of a sudden you're going to have to change a lot of things midstream, which, you know, we've seen nearly every year exactly what that kind of turnover does for the offense as a whole. So it's sort of a multifaceted quandary, I guess.
Do you think it matters with Charles Williams no longer around at running back of who they want to choose?
Yeah, I do.
Because clearly he was the all-time school rusher, one of the best runners in the Mountain West, and he was just their guy who would get 1,000 yards easy, 15, at least 1,000 yards, 1,200 a couple times. But with him not being there, do you want a quarterback with a new running back there? Do you want a quarterback who do the read option or guy who designed runs or scrambles more? Like, do you want the scrambler to be out there without the running game as much, or do you want the guy who's just a drop back guy where you know you're going to hand the ball off to whoever the running back is going to be, we'll get to. That does make a difference. But then they have one of the better receivers in the conference as well, and Kyle Williams out there who had four or five, looking here, four games, 100 plus yards last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what they want, because the offense, with these quarterbacks so different, what's going to show up on this team? Because if you bring the scrambler in, are they going to do more? Not, I don't want to say scramblers are a bad thing, but more running opportunities with him. And then you're right, it's going to change your offensive line. It's going to change your route running. If he gets hurt or it's the wrong guy, like you mentioned, possibility, never know. Go back to a typical drop back type of guy where you're, what are you doing in practice right now with each quarterback? Because if they're that different and what some of their different skill sets could be, that could make things extra work for the positions I mentioned.
Yeah. And you know, with regards to the running game in particular, you know, there's a difference between having options, right? Which I think if you look at the roster, there are, you know, I would say five guys who could reasonably contribute, but there's a difference between that and having options that you trust. And when you look at what Arroyo has done with his running game over the last two seasons, you know, you see that, you know, in 2020, Charles Williams had 116 carries. Mm-hmm. No other running back on the roster had more than 9 carries the entire year.
He ran the ball a lot.
Yeah, and granted, they only played six games, but you know, Courtney Reese, the person in question, 9 carries in 6 games that year. And that was mostly true in 2021 as well, where Williams had 254 carries, so over 21 attempts per game. And the next leading guy had 14. Again, that was Courtney Reese. You know, so between him and Chad Magyar, who had 13 carries, like, you know, both of those guys have played sparingly over the last few years. And Magyar in particular, I thought flashed a little something way back in 2019 when he was sort of, you know, the, I would say the primary backup to Williams when he had 69 carries, averaged over 5 yards per carry, scored a touchdown. He looked pretty good with more of a workload. I think he averaged about 8 carries per game that year, but then he basically hasn't seen the field at all over the last 2 seasons. And so, you go back to the depth chart that they put together after spring ball back in late April. And by the way, shout out to whoever put that together, because UNLV was the only team to put a depth chart out there. But, you know, those two guys were listed atop the depth chart in the spring. And I sort of have a lot of reservations about whether either of those guys is the answer. And if that's the case, you know, you're looking at, you know, 2, maybe 3 new faces stepping into roles that don't necessarily have a lot of on-field experience between them.
Well, in the past 3 years, Williams was top 4 in the Mountain West in total carries each year. He was number 2 in 2019, number 1 in 2020, and then last year he was top 2. So they weren't giving – it's hard to know, okay, you're a backup, but when you get 5 carries a game at most, if you're lucky, you know what I mean? Like, well, it's hard to know, and honestly, that's a coaching thing, because you have a good guy, you give him the ball. It's an area where it's a big unknown, because it's been the one position where they've actually been above average within the conference. One of the top 4 running backs, essentially. He's been right around that second team all conference type of caliber player on a team that's not very good. And with a team that's not very good, where they are losing all these games, you would think they'd throw more because they're behind. They still stuck with the running game. So I still think they're going to lean toward that, but there's no way you're going to give a brand new guy starting, whoever it is, 20 carries a game. There's no chance you're going to do that because you're stupid. Or that guy's freaking amazing, which I'm leaning toward more of the middle ground, clearly. But you're not going to bring in a brand new starter, guys who had a few carries, and be what Charles Williams was, or at least give him the workload he was getting. That's just not smart. They need to slowly kind of figure out who it is, and maybe eventually be that guy. But I doubt they're going to – there's nobody – here's my main point. Nobody's going to have 200-plus carries in this offense. Nobody.
Well, what's interesting, though, is if they do find someone who gets close to that, you know, most of the running backs on the roster are pretty big for running backs. I didn't realize that until I was just sort of looking over the roster right now. You know, Magyar is 6'2 and 215. And, you know, at least 2 of the 3 guys I sort of alluded to a minute ago, you know, Aiden Robbins, who transferred in from Louisville, and Javon Wilson, who transferred in a year ago from Oregon. You know, Robbins is 6'3 and 230 pounds.
Oh boy.
Wilson is 6'2 and 210. So, you know, that's like a handful of Brandon Jacobs is there almost, right? And then they also brought in Jordan Young Humphrey, who, you know, was an all Pioneer League guy at Stetson back in the spring. And he's sort of he's not nearly as tall. He's only 5'9", but he's sort of got that bowling ball physique where he's, you know, 5'9", but he's 205 pounds as well. So, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at a group that, you know, if the offense does decide that they want to be more reliant on the pass and they have confidence in a quarterback that can do that, you know, then they might have a staple of running backs on their hands where if they can play with a lead, you know, they have 2 or 3 guys, to your point, that they can use to salt away games late, where they don't necessarily need one guy to bring the hammer, because they might have 2 or 3 guys who could do it between the tackles.
Hold on a second. You're assuming they're going to be an opportunity to salt games away, as you said. That's not happening.
I'm just saying, like, if things break the way that I'm sure that they are hoping that it does, you know, that I think is the scenario you're looking at. You're like, you're looking for, you know, a handful of guys who can slam the door, basically.
So it's basically a coin flip. If they're going to play both guys in the opener in the first couple of games, I'm assuming. We don't know who the starter's technically going to be. They're a couple days into fall camp. They had their first pad of practice, I believe, over the weekend on Friday. They lucky for them, they start with Idaho State, which will be a should be a fairly convincing win, or at least a easy victory before they go to Cal. And they have a week off as well. So I think the Idaho State game will be a key area for both quarterback and running back to split carries and make some decisions about who's going to be your guy come week two. The receiving group is what we know the most about with Kyle Williams. He's one of the best in the conference. He led the team in, I think, almost every single game receiving yards. And it's quite amazing, Matt, for him to be that good and have not saying he's not in the great team, which he's not, but to be a guy where you're playing with a different quarterback due to injuries, where he had three or four different guys throwing him the ball, and he still had multiple 100-yard games. And not just him, but their leading receiver typically played well despite the quarterback, like when they had Steve Jenkins last year, led the team in a couple games of receiving yards. It is interesting to see that despite their not being great overall, they still had guys who were catching the ball quite well. So that's a positive versus offense. So which goes back to our quarterback situation. What are they going to do for the play calling potentially for different guys? I think it's going to be pretty straightforward. And the only difference could be if they have like a guy who's going to run a bit more, maybe they mix in a couple more design runs, but I think the offense is going to be pretty set almost of who's out there regardless, except for maybe like a 5% difference. But it is unique where Jenkins had 176 yards for San Diego State, Williams had 117 for San Jose State, 100 plus yards in multiple games. So that's a good sign for a team that's, it is weird, Matt, right? The team has a well above average receiver, almost an elite running back, but yet they're not good overall record wise.
Well, there are reasons for that we haven't touched upon yet.
I know. We haven't got to defense
we'll get to in a few minutes. But it is worth noting that Jenkins is now at Southern Utah, though. Now.
Well, I know. I just mentioned that based off last year of what they
had. But I would agree that, like, if Kyle Williams is healthy, and it's important to note that he did miss a couple of games last year because of injury.
Correct.
You know, when he's healthy, though, he's as good as any other pass catcher in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's out there.
But the difference between last year and this year is, like, the more I dig into this group, the potential pass catchers, the more intrigued I am by a lot of the new faces.
Like who?
And so I just want to run through some of the guys that I'm looking forward to, because, you know, Williams is definitely going to have, probably the wide receiver one role. And Zyle Griffin, who had 11 catches, 223 yards and a couple scores, is probably going to be part of that rotation too. But, you know, I would imagine that a lot of new faces are likely to lead the way otherwise. So for example, Seneca McKee, you know, and he's sort of an example, and there's a couple more that we'll touch upon in a little bit, of how UNLV has really gone deep into finding guys who could potentially contribute, because McKee spent last year in Division II at Erskine College in South Carolina. But do you know what his stat line was there last year?
No, let people know.
96 catches,
solid,
1133 yards, and seven touchdowns.
That's very respectable. That's really good.
Yeah, and you know, he's a guy who could probably play inside or outside. You know, and like I said, one example of the Rebels really sort of combing through, you know, every front to try and find key contributors. Same thing with a guy like Ricky White, who, you know, didn't see action last year for Michigan State, but he was a three-star recruit for the Spartans a couple of years ago. And when I think he had a handful of catches back in 2020. And if memory serves, I think he averaged something like 20 yards per catch. So clearly,
deep threat,
you know, there's something there. And then, you know, the guy I am probably most interested in, Jeffrey Weimer. 6'2", 215 pounds from the City College of San Francisco, who, if you recall from our Colorado State preview, I mentioned DeAndre Greeley was also from the City College of San Francisco. Okay. So just to run that back real quick, that team was the JUCO state champion here in California last year. Not an easy thing to do. It was a team that, if I remember correctly, I think they sent 17 different players to different Division I programs, including UNLV. But Weimer's stat line was just as impressive as anybody. 75 catches, 1,253 yards, and 17 touchdowns. And so, you know, when I looked at that depth chart that was back out in April and I saw his name out there as a guy who was lined up as a starter alongside Kyle Williams, I sort of sat up and took notice. because you know, he was getting that nod against, you know, over guys who had been part of the program for a year or two now, guys like, you know, Zyle Griffin, you know, D'Amico Nathan II, other guys like that. And so I'm very interested in what that group can accomplish if they can make the right decision at quarterback. Because I think if they can, then all of a sudden, and I haven't even talked about the tight ends yet. You know, I look at a guy like, you know, Kaleo Belongay, only had one catch last year, but, you know, he's a guy who could be a very big target over the middle of the field. He's 6'6" and 260 pounds. You know, that's a security blanket that could be as good as anybody in the conference. You know, even if he doesn't generate a ton of big plays, that's why you've got potentially three or four guys on the outside to do that instead.
Yeah, that's,
but it all comes back to that quarterback situation.
And also, are they going to be more of a pass first type of team with a new running back, very inexperienced? I guess a lot of it's inexperience overall, besides Kyle Williams, like you mentioned, Michigan State transfer, guys coming in from JUCO, tight end has one catch last year. They're fairly inexperienced, even though if Brumfield starts, or Brumfield for real, or maybe it's a Tennessee guy coming in transfers, their offense is going to be fairly inexperienced. But I do think maybe, the way they've been running the ball with using Williams the past couple of years, maybe they should be throwing the ball first because they have the receiver. Williams could go up against anybody. And I know those guys are inexperienced, like just their level of competition is different from JUCO, not playing in the Big Ten of Michigan State coming over. There's going to be, open competition like the week one or week zero when they play Idaho State. There's chance for it to be well above average, but again, you're right. Quarterback has to be the same guy as much as possible. Last year's kind of unlucky with injuries. That's injury luck's the thing, or luck or unluck, however to put it. If they stick with the one guy, this unit is going to be, I think, pretty good. And if the running game's out there, they have enough guys to throw the ball. I think that's what their plan should be, and just take the running back as a committee approach. But I think they have talent, or at least. They do have proven talent in Williams, but potential talent in other guys to make this unit be, at least average in a conference with an above, with at least one elite receiver, with the other guys, hopefully at least average at worst.
Yeah. But on top of all that, like, you know, obviously the quarterback situation is going to get a lot of the headlines one way or another.
Always.
And, you know, the excitement among the new, you know, pass catchers is going to be something to watch too. But the offensive line has to be better too.
Always.
And I say that for any number of reasons, which I'm just going to lay out very quickly. Mm-hmm. Line yards per carry, which is the thing I talk about in all these team previews, they were 122nd nationally.
Doesn't seem good.
Opportunity rate, 113th. So that means they, you know, for as good as Charles Williams was, they weren't getting him to the second level nearly often enough. Power success rate, so short yardage situations, 112th overall, 58.8%. So two out of every five times they were getting shut down in short yardage situations. Overall stuff rate allowed, 105th. So one out of every five plays they were getting stopped at or behind the line of scrimmage. And then they also, most critically to this entire conversation, gave up a sack rate of 10.9%.
Oh,
124th nationally. All of that has to get better.
To put that,
and if you're looking for sort of a shorthand for what I'm sort of envisioning, everybody's got to get on Leif Beltano's level.
Yeah.
Because, you know, among the returning Rebels offensive linemen, you know, your mileage may vary on Pro Football Focus grades, but he had a grade of 73.4 overall, and that was the best among all of the returners among this unit. There were a couple of others who were, you know, relatively middle of the pack and, you know, solid contributors. And I'm thinking primarily of, like, you know, Amani Trigg-Wright was pretty solid. But, you know, there are other guys in this unit that just, they have to get better. And I think, you know, case in point, Tiger Shanks, who I believe he was the starter all year long at left tackle last year. Started all but one game at right tackle. And he was the worst graded tackle in the entire conference.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yikes.
So, you know, so there are some guys who have definitely showed a lot of promise and have been sort of examples of what, you know, Marcus Arroyo and company have been able to do as far as developing prospects. You know, I think, you know, Kyle Williams is the best example of that, Friel winning freshman of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, Feltanu, I think, is another example of that. But that hasn't been universal. And so some of the guys that they're counting on, or they're going to continue to count upon, you know, they have to get better. And at the same time, they have to hope that some of the other transfer portal arrivals for this unit, you know, are able to stick at least as depth pieces as well. You know, they brought in DJ Stuckey from Cal Poly, Kobe Bryant with C from SMU. And I think maybe most interestingly, Preston Nichols, who coincidentally was, I believe he was a teammate of Davion McDaniel, who also transferred from Charleston Southern to UNLV. And if you look at overall PFF grades, Nichols had an 86.7 grade overall. That would have been the third best figure in the Mountain West last year. And it wasn't like it was a circumstance of like a huge run pass blocking split either. Like he was very good last year at the FCS level. And if he can be anywhere near that good in the Mountain West, you know, that's the kind of thing that could be a game changer for this entire offense, because they need more game changers up front.
They do, because it all comes back to, with new running back, obviously, all these guys coming in from Cal Poly, or not Cal, yeah, Cal Poly, Charleston Southern. But it's going to come back to, we say the quarterback's the most important thing, but I think the offensive line in this situation is with how bad it was last year, almost 3.5 sacks per game. We look at that type of number, including what you mentioned before for sack rate to 10%, which is, hey, yikes. New guys coming in. It's still weird that they were able to run as well as they did with Charles Williams while not being a good offensive line. And throwing to, I know Williams only had 650 yards last year, nothing amazing, or just over 600 yards. But if that unit can take the next step, they can gel. Because, yes, the guy's at Cal Poly, but he played 40 games, I think 40, 41 games at Cal Poly. So, and that's a pretty good program, too. Like, there are no slouch playing at FCS level. So they bring these guys in, and I think this is the most important position of offense for them to be better, because that comes together, and they play well, and they – even think of this, maybe if they increase their sack rate or sacks per game from, like, LSU's per game, if they go from 3.4 to 3, half a sack, like a half a sack a game is six fewer per game set being sacked. That could go a long way. If you have six more chances to make a passing play and they lost all those games by 8 points or less, one possession, that could lead to something they need. They clearly can't be worth last year, because that's not going to happen. That's terrible. But they got to make some step forward. Be top 100 in all those categories. That would go an extremely long way to help everybody out with this new running back, new receivers after Kyle Williams, a transfer guys coming in, depending who's a quarterback. If they could keep them upright and just be a little bit better in top 100 in those categories, heck, be 99th. That's almost 15 to 20 spots better than everything else they've been. That might be enough to get them an extra win or two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, theoretically, you know, the only, you know, full-time contributor that they really have to replace from last year is Julio Garcia. And that's exactly where Nichols would probably slot in at left guard. But, you know, at the same time, you know, they bring back, what, you know, they bring back McDaniel, Vautanu, Trigg-Wright, Shanks. That's what, four starters right there?
I think so, yeah.
As a group, they have to be better. Like quarterback gets the attention, offensive line could sink it if they just don't take a step forward.
Yeah, there's no way to put around a fist. Units somehow worse than last year. This is going to be like maybe a one-win team potentially.
Yeah.
So, all right, ready to go to defense, which is the real area that needs to be better to make them somewhat good.
So you know how I mentioned that, like, depending on how you look at things, you know, they were either very bad or surprisingly good.
Nothing on defense.
That was true on this side of the ball, actually. Ooh, so, like, you know how so you may remember at the very beginning, I mentioned like how they were dead last in terms of just yards per play, right?
Yeah, not good.
On the whole, though, by a lot of those more advanced measures I just mentioned for the offensive line being, you know, needing to be better, they were actually well above average by nearly all of those same metrics. You know, line yards per carry, they were 38th nationally. You know, opportunity rate, 27th overall. Power success rate, 23rd. Stuff rate, you know, 20.9%, 22nd overall. And they were right around the national average with a 6.7% sack rate, too. That was 63rd among FBS teams. So they did a lot of things well. It was, you know, part of the problem was they gave up way too many big plays last year, which we'll talk more about that in a minute. The other problem, which I'm less certain about, is that it was very star-driven, too. And I say that thinking particularly about Jacoby Windman, who moved from defensive end to linebacker and was still making everybody's lives miserable week after week. And then he transferred to Michigan State.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about Brennan Scott, who, you know, one of my biggest crushes anywhere in the Mountain West. I'll just put that out there.
Yeah.
You know, he had, you know, came on strong, especially in the second half of the year, but he finished the entire season with 10 TFLs. The only freshman in the conference, by the way, to get to double-digit TFLs, four sacks. But it just came out recently that he suffered a pretty serious injury in spring ball. And now people are thinking that he might not play at all this year.
It's been a surprise because we wrote an article about, hey, breakout guys for these teams. And then Steve Cofield of Las Vegas, was it UNLV 11-6 or Vegas 11-6, I think it is. Or whatever, sorry, radio station there. But he's like, he's hurt and not playing. We're like, what? Teams need to tell us this stuff. That'd be nice. But it came out, I think, August 2nd, so a few days after camp was going, that he, of course, Coach Arroyo says, all he says that he's out right now. So depending on how the teams do it, because some teams are different. Like when I do stuff for University of Utah, they only mention a status if they're out for the year. And so Coach Arroyo says, unfortunately, he's out right now. His return to play is yet to be determined. But a pretty serious injury that unfortunately occurred for us. He's going to be missed, but he's still a big morale piece of this team. That sounds to me he's likely out for the season.
So, I mean, your priority number one is, okay, how do you create havoc? Because
shake your hands really fast.
At least among the returning contributors, really only Adam Plant is the one who did any serious damage last year. He had 46 tackles. 7 TFLs, 3.5 sacks. Other than that,
nothing.
Question marks everywhere. Yeah. Which is not to say that there aren't guys who have been, you know, solid contributors. And I think, you know, case in point, Eliel Ehimare didn't necessarily light up the stat sheet, but, you know, in terms of Pro Football Focus grades, he was a pretty decent, you know, interior defender, 27 tackles, 4 TFLs. But then beyond that, you know, you've got holdovers who have really only played in part-time roles. You have guys like Wesali Moavesi, Tavis Malakias, Naki Pahina, and a handful of transfers, you know, like Isaiah Sales came in from Missouri State, Ben Key, probably going to be a nose guard type guy from Missouri, Jordan Eubanks, who's probably going to play off the edge. You know, I just mentioned like six guys. They're going to need at least probably two or three of them to hit if they don't want to just get pushed around up front.
Yeah, I don't know. This is going to be a tough blow for them because up front with losing Whitman transferring and injuries to Scott, it's Here's the thing. Let's be a little positive. There's going to be somebody that steps up and does something. Maybe Plant comes in and has a breakout season. But there's got to be. I'm looking at their numbers last year. Like, there's even with Plant and Whitman, they weren't amazingly great. Those two guys had 10 of their 14 sacks last year. They had, or 22 sacks, half their sacks. There's got to be somebody, because you would think that's the logical stuff. Somebody's going to have to make plays. It's a lot of who's who. We don't know who is going to be, but also all these transfers, that makes it so hard for us to predict, like, how good these guys going to be. We already mentioned how many transfers from the offensive line come in, a receiver, the defense. Now there's got to be somebody to do it. I hate playing the game. Like, who's it going to be? I don't know. But historically, nobody's really stepped up for the most part for UNLV defense. They had some hope with Scott coming in, but repeating last year potentially. I just don't know who's going to be. And I have no confidence that the front's going to provide much resistance against anybody.
Well, and again, it just comes down to sifting through a ton of options. And I didn't even mention two of the sort of, I guess what you might say, former top prospects. You know, there's, you know, like LaShawn Bell, for example, I think was a high three-star guy in Marcus Arroyo's first recruiting class, if I'm not mistaken. You know, in the spring depth chart, he was listed as, you know, the third guy from the rush position behind Plant Jr. in Sales. But, you know, now that Scott is out for probably a significant amount of time, you know, he could see a lot more reps and become that much more important as a result. You know, another guy in that same vein is a guy like Nick Demetris, who, you know, when we did our preseason exercise for freshman of the year 2 years ago, you know, he was my pick to be a freshman of the year. He ended up redshirting last year, but, you know, he's listed as a backup at one of the defensive tackle positions, but he's another guy who might be in line for more. It might just end up being a team effort where maybe they don't have one all conference guy stepping up and making waves, but they have three or four guys stepping up and being sort of key contributors in that sense.
I'm just not hopeful. That's unfortunate to say, but I'm not hopeful this unit, the front seven, will be anything special. Maybe hopefully they prove me wrong, but the losses, the trends of what they've typically done, new defensive coordinators, we mentioned way earlier on the show. It's hard for me to see positive where this unit can be really good. Or not even really good, but have a breakout player who gets like seven sacks. And that's a lot to ask, I think.
I mean, if you're looking for upside, then the linebackers can be pretty good.
Potentially, maybe, I don't know. I'm just
I say that because, you know, Austin Ajiaki is another one of those guys who was probably underappreciated last year. You know, I think he had his season cut short by injury. He only played in 8 games, I believe.
Almost 10 tackles a game, though.
Yeah, but I was going to say, if he qualified, he would have finished 4th in the Mountain West in averaging 9.25 tackles per game, 9.25. And then, you know, opposite him, Kyle Beaudry ended up getting elevated into the lineup. I'm pretty sure it was in his stead, if memory serves. And, you know, Beaudry had 34 tackles in the last 4 games of the year, all of which he started. So, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, two guys who could be pretty efficient tackling machines in the same way that, you know, we're used to talking about with, like, for example, a Kyle Harmon at San Jose State. But the trick is, like, the defensive line is going to have to do enough so that they aren't just getting caught up in other people's messes. The other trick is, too, is, like, there isn't a lot of depth behind them either.
Yeah, that's – but also those guys you mentioned, they had 1 sack between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And linebackers have to have sacks. Like, I know Windman was there getting sacks, and Scott was there, they had 10.5 sacks, as we mentioned. If that – here's the thing that's positive about those two guys and everybody else coming in. That unit has proven to make some, because Kyle, you mentioned Deidre had 1.5 sacks last year. That unit does make some plays. So somebody's going to come in and make a play. It's just kind of who's it going to be. And see, the thing is, if Whitman stayed, not that it would, and Scott was healthy, the unit and depth would help these other guys get down much better. So hopefully the scheme they've been running with those guys, I know it's more possibly more talent than scheme, but the defense has shown to be able to make plays to get to the quarterback. So hopefully maybe like Kyle Beecher comes in and gets 6 sacks, 5 sacks or something, because the scheme they've been doing, assuming it's somewhat similar, because I believe they lost their DC kind of late in the process, if I recall. And then when the hiring they were made, but that area is a field of play, that unit The reason you may mention look out for them, there's potential there, is that they've always had solid linebackers UNLV the past couple of years. And that goes to talent, scheme, recruiting. And this will be the one area defense if it's going to be, well, I know we got Noah Williams in secondary to talk about, but this unit has a potential to do what it did last year, close to it, to help the defense not be as bad and maybe overcompensate a little bit for the defensive line that's still trying to find its place.
Well, and speaking of the secondary, when I mentioned that, you know, the defense has a lot to sort out, you know, this unit in particular was what I was thinking about, because, you know, they gave up 46 20-yard pass plays last year, which was, you know, 10th in the conference among all defenses. But more to the point, like, you know, Williams is good. He's a keeper. He's probably the best cornerback anywhere in the conference right now. You know, he could, and I say that because he only had four pass breakups, only one interception. But, you know, Pro Football Focus again, his coverage grade, 80.6, was number one in the Mountain West among returning cornerbacks. So they got at least one spot locked down. But the problem is, as a unit last year, they were dead last in the Mountain West with a 69.7% completion rate allowed. Dead last with 8.3 yards per attempt allowed, and dead last with 26 passing touchdowns allowed. All of those have to get better, and they're counting on a lot of new people to try and make that happen. Because, you know, Williams, again, another example of how they've had a really surprisingly strong record of development over the last couple of years. And I think you could make a case that, you know, guys like Ricky Johnson, Cameron Oliver are probably along that same path. You know, both of those guys saw a lot of playing time last year as underclassmen, and both, you know, had their ups and downs, but definitely flashed potential here and there. And I think, you know, if you're a Rebels fan, you probably remember that heads up interception that Johnson in particular had against San Diego State when they were really, when they were challenging the Aztecs in that game. But elsewhere, you know, you're looking at it, you know, a guy, you're looking at contributors like, you know, Jarai Williams, who, if they're moving to a 4-2-5, I think he's probably going to be the likely answer at the nickelback position. He hasn't played in 2 years.
Uh-oh.
Because he transferred from Arkansas Monticello, but then sat out both 2020 and 2021. But, you know, if he's a strong enough performer in spring and fall camp that he's listed as a starter at cornerback position opposite Noel Williams, then I think you have to think there might be something there. But, you know, they're counting on him, you know, coming out strong out the gate. Same thing with an entirely new safety tandem too, because Bryce Jackson is gone. You know, Philip Hill is gone. And they're starting two new guys, Tyson Player and Jonathan Baldwin, who, you know, between the two of them, Player started three games last year, two at free safety, one at strong safety. And, you know, Baldwin was more of sort of a depth piece, a role player, but both of those guys are stepping up and they're going to be counted upon to try and improve a lot of those overall numbers.
It'd be tough.
And it's just, it's a lot to ask.
Yeah, because you mentioned like their last in completion percentage allowed, yards per attempt last, they were near the bottom interceptions. It's only 9, and the worst in conference was 6. They were thrown upon reasonably well. I think the most, near the bottom in yards per game. And so it's an area where teams will throw it will against them. Yeah, if Noah Williams could lock down a guy, okay, that'll help quite a bit, hopefully. But then again, you got the whole defense. It's all obviously one huge unit, but if Williams can do his thing, if they can improve a little bit, but it's going to be the guys up front. They need to provide pressure, so you're not having your quarterbacks guard a guy in the field off the snap for 4 or 5 seconds, so the offensive line can just hold off UNLV's pass rush of any kind. So even if Williams is that great, guys will eventually get open, even if you're that good. And so this unit does need to step up, but it's going to, I think more importantly, to help them be better, you got to have some sort of pressure. Dude, get your hands up. You're 6'8", 6'9", defensive line linebacker. Get a hand up, jump, do something. But as for the actual talent, it's, I don't know, man. Guys don't play in a couple of years, like you mentioned. They do return some good talent, but they just, all UNLV needs to do, we'll get to the schedule part, but just improve a little bit everywhere, and they'll all add up. I know it's cliche and dumb to say, but if they get another interception or two, or if Noah Williams gets another sack, or not sack, another INT, or goes to 7 pass breakups from 3 or 4 he had last year, It's just going to take little stuff, but when they play, I guess being the West helps a little bit outside of playing. Well, maybe not, because Fresno's going to throw the ball. Hawaii's going to throw the ball. San Jose State's going to throw the ball. They play Notre Dame this year, stuff like that. It's going to be tricky, but the unit itself, it's, I hate to say, it's dumb to say, well, just don't be worse than last year, but they're pretty bad last year too. They need to be at some point with Coach Arroyo's third year. There needs to be some improvement. I know 2020 was weird just because played a handful of games and practice was different and everything. So it's like year two and a half, essentially. But they got to show some improvement. I know I'm not saying he's an excuse type of guy, but he can't use an excuse for transfer guys. But he got as many transfers that come in that leave. It's his job now to coach his secondary and the whole defense up. I know I'm kind of doing big picture here, but they just got to find guys and try to make the secondary. They have the weird thing, not the weird thing, but the thing about this team on defense, it's positive a bit. They have just a couple enough guys to be good. And if those couple of guys can show the most improvement, it can shut down or make noise in their area. The other guys are going to have to step up and make a play, because if you take away 15% of the field, whatever it may be, if you're Noel Williams, you're taking away that part of it, or a linebacker here taking away part of it because he can get the QB, or has to have like a guy and a half, like a chip off the line, or maybe double team occasionally. They're going to need their good guys to play extremely well and to give these other guys opportunities. And these guys in secondary need to jump on passes, need to make plays, and they'll have chances to do that because people are going to want to throw it to you in a V. So if these guys want playing time, want balls coming their way, they're coming your way, guys. These guys will have plenty of chances to make their own plays and show if they're good or maybe not good, because they were thrown upon. Let me get it right here. Per game, not as many as I thought it was. They're only thrown against almost 28 times a game, but they're giving up like 8.5 yards per attempt. They're giving up almost 10 yards per pass completion, Matt. It's not good.
You are correct.
I'm just saying. I could just say they're not very good, but my point, I don't know, it's just, I don't want to ramble, but I'm just saying, like, you got enough good guys to help make the defense possibly be a little bit better. And again, these other guys will have chances to make their own plays. So if Williams or whoever can stuff their guy, fine, they'll throw somebody else. So that's all I got for defense. For the defense to improve even a little bit, will go a long way, I think, because if you make that an incremental improvement, like I said, it'll make a big difference. Because if they were to do 1 yard less per pass attempt and they throw the ball 30 something times, that's 30 more yards coming your way on defense. If it's one less yard per, and if they do one less yard per pass attempt, that's still basically, that's actually almost middle of the pack. Middle of the pack was 7.4 for Air Force and Hawaii. So if they can get somewhere in there at yards per attempt allowed, and they're still being thrown against 28 to 30 times, 30 yards is 3 first downs. Just saying, a little bit here and there. And that improvement should be able to be done, because that's 8.3 is a lot. I'm just using one number, but just improve a little bit. It's like the 10% thing. Just improve a little bit here or there. And we want UNLV to be good, because how great it'd be if Allegiant Stadium, they're fighting for a bowl game, or they're fighting for the rival playing these certain teams, playing good competition, and they can shut somebody down here and there. I want exciting people to be at these games and not Allegiant Stadium to have like 8 people inside.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all I got. Sorry, I kind of rambling on there. But yeah, let's move this. What do I got for special teams? Who's going to be kicking these field goals for Matt and putting the ball?
Well, the field goal units should actually be in pretty good shape, since Daniel Gutierrez, for the moment, actually holds UNLV's record now for a career field goal success rate.
Yeah, he made 21 to 27 last year. So for the whole career, he has success rate. So that's what, field goal percentage?
That's correct.
He made every PAT last year. He does kickoff duty as well, obviously. So it's part of it too. UNLV, offense stalls, get points where you get points. They're not going to be picky. So they have a good field goal kicker, Gutierrez. That's awesome.
They are replacing their punter, though. Evan Silva is not on the team anymore, apparently.
Do we know what happened?
And they have a couple of options. They could go back to Charlton Butt, who was the punter a couple of years ago. They brought in Marshall Nichols from Mississippi State. So, I mean, it may not be the most important competition to watch, but considering how much I think field position is likely to matter a lot to this team this year, it is something that bears worth watching. And then, like, they didn't really have standouts in the return game last year either. So it's sort of an open question as to whether that's going to be a major factor or not too.
Yeah, that's they've got to. I don't know, you want to, yeah, field position for them, because that's going to be, it's always a big deal. It's easy to get to. We're at Stonehouse, blasted 70-yard punts for the Tennessee Titans earlier today. They have all these guys out in the West. So if they could, if it's a Mississippi State guy, it's field position is going to be key for them. It's for any team, but for the Rebels, where here's the thing, guys. Here's a little secret, Matt. Rebels need any help they can get, any yard they can get is a boon for them. That's what I'm getting at here.
Exactly.
Is it time for the schedule?
Let's do it.
Oh, boy. Their schedule is it's a football schedule. They start – we've mentioned Idaho State like five times. That's who they open up with.
We've only mentioned them once. We talked about them during the San Diego State podcast.
And guess what? The Bengals aren't very good at football.
Well, I can give you an abbreviated FCS minute, because I feel like I mentioned everything worth mentioning about the Bengals the last time we talked about them.
Give us a half.
Since that point, you know, Big Sky Media Days did happen. They were picked last under new head coach Charlie Ragel. They were tied for 11th among the coaches. You know, we mentioned Tyler Vanderwall last time. He's likely to be the starting quarterback if he stays healthy. Former Wyoming quarterback, but they're replacing. I go back and I review, and I'm like, man, they're replacing a lot outside of that, because you know their leading receiver, Jacob Connor, is in the NFL now. You know, nobody else on the roster had more than 23 catches and two touchdowns last year. You know, they're replacing their top running back. They're replacing their two top tacklers. It's probably going to be a really long year on Pocatello as they really pick up pieces. So, you know, as much as, you know, a lot, you know, maybe Nevada fans are still thinking about how they lost Eastern Washington last year, UNLV should run away with this game. It should not be close at all.
Yeah, they should win this easily. Then they get a week off. This is a week zero game. They don't, which is weird. Then they don't play week one, which is kind of odd. Was there a reason why these games got moved? Because it seems like the only reason you go week zero to week one or week two, because the game got switched. Do you recall anything with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what goes into those justifications. I mean, I don't mind it.
It's just weird.
I don't have to like multi-screen on Saturdays every week, so I'm cool with it.
There you go. Then they play at Cal, who Pac-12 Media Day came and went about a week or two ago. At this point, Cal's predicted ninth in the Pac-12, only ahead of Arizona State, Arizona, and Colorado. Despite their defense being allegedly good for Justin Wilcox, one player chosen, Brett Johnson, defense lineman for all Pac-12, and that was second team. So for the Wilcox defense, it's like, well, what do you got there? I don't know, because the defense isn't very good. And then I'm looking at the honorable mention. I don't think they have many here, maybe outside of guys like, I'm going to butcher his name, Matt. So you ready for this for linebacker?
Are you talking about Femi Oladeja?
Oh, is that how you say his name? Oh, here it has Olahu Femi. Is it just Femi?
Okay, you might be looking at someone else.
Oh, I'm at the Pac-12 meeting. It's Oluwafemi Oluwato, who you said, Olato.
Oh, okay. I was looking at someone else on the roster. Oh,
that's a very similar name. Sheesh. I'm like, wait a minute, because the last part of his name is Femi. And so I'm like, so they had a couple.
I was also wondering if you were thinking about Lumagia Hearns, the sophomore cornerback, who was pretty good last year. Actually,
I have not gotten there. No, I was going through like the all conference stuff here, and I was kind of scrolling through. I must have missed him. He did. Oh, there he is. Yeah, he was looks like honorable mention. But like, what, you know what the weirdest thing is about Cal? Why did Justin Wilcox turn down the Oregon job?
I mean, to be fair, if you've been to Berkeley, you'll understand. I like Berkeley.
Yeah, but it's Oregon.
I like Berkeley, though.
Do you like to win football games? You go to Oregon.
I mean, you could do a lot worse than making $3 million and living in one of the chillest places in America.
Yeah, but wouldn't six in Oregon go way better and farther?
Well, okay, but here's the thing. You know how we talked about at the top how UNLV had a lot of bad luck in close games last year?
Cal did too, right?
That is also true of the Golden Bears. They lost by 5 to Nevada, 2 to TCU. They lost by a touchdown to Washington and Oregon, both on the road. And then they lost. They gave Arizona their only win of the year too. And that was mostly because there was a lot of players held out because of COVID-related protocols. So in case you were keeping track, that was 5 losses by 7 points or fewer last year.
Wasn't Cal the USC game that got pushed to championship weekend? Nobody watched.
That is correct.
Who won that game? USC? I forget.
Cal did.
Oh, Cal beat. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good for them. Okay. They beat,
here's the thing about Cal, which UNLV is going to have to be wary of in this game. Cal is a pain in, well, am I allowed to say pain in the ass? Pain
you just did. You just did. Go for it.
I'll shorthand it. I'll say they are a pain to deal with because the defense has typically been pretty good. Like, you know, by SP Plus last year, they finished 52nd overall on that side of the ball. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've talked about how, you know, most of the talent on this team is on that side of the ball. We didn't even mention safety Daniel Scott, mm-hmm. linebacker Jackson Sermon. You know, you mentioned Brett Johnson, who's back after a year off. I believe he had a car accident that knocked him out for the entire season last year. So, you know, there's enough talent on that side of the ball to really put the brakes on you know, any improvements that UNLV wants to make. Bigger question for Cal, as always, is will the offense be able to keep up? Because, you know, they too are trying to find a solid answer at quarterback. They brought in Jack Plummer from Purdue. You know, they got a couple of internal candidates, Ty Milliner, Zach Johnson. You know, they I believe are also replacing their top running back from last year. Christopher Brooks is gone, but Damian Moore is still around, and they have a very highly regarded recruit coming in, Jaden Ott. By the way, they're also replacing, I'm looking at the numbers, they're replacing six of their seven top pass catchers from last year too. Yeah. The only holdover being Jeremiah Hunter.
The thing from last year, they returned everybody last year were garbage. Now they return only like eight starters and they expect them to be better. No way.
I'm sort of shrugging my shoulders. I have this as a UNLV win.
What?
Because I think that UNLV's offense should be able to last Cal's offense. Like if they're gonna be better this year, this is a game the Rebels should win, even if it takes a fist fight to do it.
On the road at famed Memorial Stadium, sitting on the fault line, they're gonna beat Cal.
Strawberry Hill and everything. Yes.
Okay, I'm going with you as well. They're gonna beat Cal as well, so on the road.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Because I looked at FPI, I think it is, or the gate, whatever ESPN uses, they have a million percentages. Cal's like pretty heavy favorite in this game. I was looking for the line itself, but couldn't find it, but it's like 80%. Here's the thing. I think Cal probably should win this game, but returning so few guys, new quarterback, all the pass catchers gone, offenses are both abysmal, in my opinion. Neither of these are very great. I think it'll come down to like this would be a good chance for the Rebel defense to make some plays against a bad Cal offense. And I would not be surprised if UNLV were win this like 17-15 or something like that. It's going to be a low scoring game.
Sort of like their hated rival won the game last year against this team.
Yeah, it's going to be something low scoring. I'm leaning UNLV, but just because I want the Rebels to get a win. They're more evenly matched, people will say. So watch this game when it kicks off, probably at 8:45 local time on Pac-12 Network Plus, which you can't get. So, we'll figure out where the game.
If you're in Vegas, just go to a casino and watch it somewhere.
Exactly. There you go.
That's how you do it.
And so I got them winning 2-0, playing. Then they host North Texas Mean Green, which they have been like they're always a feisty team. This is didn't they play North Texas in a bowl game about a handful of years ago?
That was their last bowl game, actually, and it was in 2014.
Was it
January 1st, 2014?
The Ticket City Bowl or something like that?
The Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Oh, I was way far off, but not really, because they're always different and changing. So North Texas always, they're a couple of years removed from guys like Graham Harrell being their OC, passing the ball and slinging around a lot, but that's what they're kind of known for, passing the ball quite a bit. And North Texas, they are in, conference updates. Did they change?
They're still in Conference USA.
That's what I thought. I'm like, are they moving? Because there's a lot of movement.
They're moving to the American next year, but right now they're in Conference USA.
So they're in Conference USA for one more season. And oh boy, Conference USA is so bad, right?
Yes.
It is. What is the Big Sky better than Conference USA?
I mean, the teams at the top of Conference USA are pretty good. The teams at the bottom are it's a pit of despair down there.
We're being kind to saying that they're not very good. Is this
but
only?
But then again, we just talked about Idaho State, and so that's also true of the Big Sky.
A good point. They do have some very bad teams there. So when we look at this team, like what stands out to you? Are they still going to kind of be their passing team they want to be? Like that's what I've typically known them to be for. It's not that we study them too often, but I'm just like, this is a game. It's at home, playing to me and Green, who's taken a step back from winning conference titles. I just, I don't know, man. Like, they, I don't know what they're going to do.
The fun question about this North Texas team is, which North Texas team are you going to get? Are you going to get the team that started the year last year? What was it, 1-6?
Let me see.
And we're not terribly competitive most weeks.
Yeah, they started with Northwestern State, 1-0, then lost to UAB, SMU, Tech, Missouri, Marshall.
Or are you going to get the North Texas team that won its last five games before losing in bowl season?
Hey, they also beat UTSA,
including against UTSA. They disrupted UTSA's undefeated season.
They did. And then Seth Luttrell's a pretty good coach as well. So they have
he was that close to being fired, and then they turned it around. So new lease on life. But it really kind of depends on how the offense comes together, because it was sort of all over the map last year. And you know, I think their quarterback's likely to be Austin on. Was sort of emblematic of that. You know, he had 13 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. That was in 2020, last year. What do you have last year? Am I looking at the wrong numbers?
He was, Phil still is not helpful here. Not helpful for me.
Nine touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 51.2% completion rate. There you go.
Not great.
Yeah. Sort of all over the map. You know, he got replaced at times by Jace Reuter. You know, now they have Grant Gunnell in, who transferred in from Arizona. Mm-hmm. So, like, that situation's up in the air, but they might have a pretty solid passing game if they can sort of get it all together, because most of their major contributors on that front are back. You know, Roderick Burns, their number one receiver, had over 800 yards last year. And they've got, you know, 3-4 other guys who had somewhere between 150 and 300 receiving yards last year as well. So, like, maybe it comes together, but then also, like, they need more star power on defense too. Like, you know, they've got Katie Davis, who, you know, if you don't know the name, he might be the best defender anywhere in that conference.
Possibly 6.5 sacks last year. Pretty good.
He might be 121 tackles, 10.5 TFLs. Like, he's a very good player. Also, you know, flirted with the transfer portal, almost left before deciding to come back too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, North Texas, though, compared to Idaho State and Cal, strikes me as the kind of team that could exploit one of these potential weaknesses, which is why I have this one as a loss.
This could be either blowout for North Texas or UNLV could get a victory. I kind of see it being that type of, I'm picking UNLV to start 3-0 because I'm crazy and foolish, I'm guessing. The reason I probably shouldn't take them is because that passing attack, and that's an issue for them. But I'm going to go Rebels win because it's at home. They got a big one after Cal, and I think they can hang with North Texas because, again, they're a Jekyll and Hyde team. Maybe they're the team that played versus UTSA, or maybe they're the team that lost to who's a bad team they lost to? Actually, all the teams lost to weren't bad, but Louisiana Tech wasn't great. So let's say it's Louisiana Tech, because it's an interesting thing. In those five games they lost, they were double-digit underdogs in every one of those games, and two were 20-plus, one was a 19-plus line against them versus Missouri. So it's not like that schedule was easy when you're playing SMU, UAB, La Tech, Missouri, Marshall, Liberty. Those weren't easy games. So them losing all those games is not a concern. Or maybe, well, it is, but on the surface, if you look kind of deeper of how good those other teams were compared to North Texas, they probably deserved to lose all those games. The schedule is just front-loaded. But I'm going to be crazy and just say UNLV could win to have them start 3-0 for probably the first time in, dare I say, 45 years. I have no clue the last time they started 3-0. Do you?
I have no idea.
No idea. But it'd be a sight to be seen at the 3-0, right? Party on the strip for Vegas, right?
That's right.
Then they go to Utah State for their first conference game. Their next conference set is basically every other game. And they have a Notre Dame game in the mix there, which is later on. They play them on the road at South Bend. But they start Utah State on the road, which we'll go listen to our Aggie podcast. But, you know, does Logan Bonner will exploit the secondary. Calvin Tyler, who's in our, top 25 in our top 50 countdown? Calvin Tyler Jr.? No. Oh, my mistake. I'm thinking of something else. But they're not going to win, right? Is there anything to add to this team? Because Rebels defense can't keep pace with this offense, right?
No, I doubt it.
Are they beating New Mexico at home?
Yes.
Ooh, question. Why? You're not confident.
Well, okay, so I like New Mexico's defense. We're going to talk about the Lobos defense at some point. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. I mean, the offense, though, isn't going to be dead last again. I just don't know how much improvement there's going to be on that side of the ball. But it is probably not enough that UNLV should not be able to outlast them.
What do you think? Okay, so then let me ask you this. Are they going to win by double digits, UNLV?
I mean, if you're putting me on the spot right now, I'd say probably, but barely.
Okay, that's my thought, too, because this is one of the games where they Lobos have a lot of replacement. I know you like their defense, but quarterback is changing. All sorts of stuff is changing there. But I'm going Rebels win because it's at home, and these teams are relatively even on the front. So this is where the schedule kicks into high gear. At San Jose State, host Air Force. This schedule is very brutal, like including travel-wise. The next five, at San Jose, home to Air Force, at Notre Dame, at San Diego State, host Fresno, then go to Hawaii. I have one win in that stretch.
I have zero.
Zero? Oh, boy. Okay, so we go through the games really quick. San Jose State, passing attack is kind of obvious why they can't keep up, right? With Shavon Cordero passing to Isaiah Hamilton, other guys.
Yeah, and they have the talent up front that I think could make a bad matchup for this Rebels offensive line. Yeah,
Cade Hall, Fajoco, those type of guys. Air Force, triple option, run option, obviously. Notre Dame, I know they have Marcus Freeman, new head coach. They still have Tommy Rees calling the plays. But if Notre Dame's going to be, a top 10 team preseason, there's no way UNLV can keep pace with them. This might be like a 40-point victory for the Irish.
Yeah, probably.
Does Notre Dame play anybody else in the conference this year? I forget.
Not this year, no.
So do we need to preview Notre Dame for a minute, or does it matter with the bashing the Rebels are going to take on the road?
I mean, I guess we could, if only because, we want to be able to treat every non-conference opponent at least somewhat equally.
We did versus Alabama, Utah Dame, State too, so.
I mean, I don't know if Notre Dame is on anybody's short list for a college football playoff spot, but
fringe. They
might get there. Yeah, they're sort of on the outside fringes of the conversation. They went 11-2 last year, and of course we all know Brian Kelly left South Bend for Louisiana State. They bring in Marcus Freeman from Cincinnati. No, seems like he's been killing it in the recruiting game at least, so that's something to look forward to. And they've got some pretty good pieces on both sides of the ball. Like, I don't know if how many All-American type pieces they have outside of their, maybe their tight end Michael Mayer. But they're the replacement for who's our quarterback last year? I'm trying to remember. Was it Jack Cohn last year?
Was it
Cohn? Yeah, Jack Cohn. Yeah, Cohn.
Coneheads, remember that.
but Tyler Buchner, played pretty well when he saw the field last year, and he's probably going to be the starter this year. Like, the offense might take a step forward, especially since they're also bringing back four of their five starting offensive linemen too. So that's all to say, it's probably going to be a long, long day for the Rebels in South Bend.
Yeah, like Bill Connolly has him about projected wins at 9, which seems a touch low. They're top 10 off defense, top 10 overall SP plus, 22 offense overall, nearly a lock to go to a bowl game, which makes sense. The quarterback situation is unclear, like we mentioned, but defense, it would Freeman be promoted from within, they'll be fine. And Al Golden's their DC coming in from, I don't know where he's at recently, but he's at Temple, Virginia as well over the past couple of years. But this will be a unit or a team where if it's within four touchdowns, I'll be surprised.
Yeah.
So my win is at Hawaii. Is that too risky? Because it's a road game for the Ninth Island Trophy, I think is what it's called.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, we talked about the Warriors a while ago at this point, but I do think that they are sort of operating in maybe similar bubbles where the offense might be ahead of the defense on paper.
Yeah.
And if that's the kind of game where, it could go either way, where both teams sort of score mostly at will.
I think I'm just going with UNLV. I don't know, maybe because I want to try to get them to 6 wins and I'm kind of willing that out there, but I think when you look at the pecking order, I was on with the guys with ESPN Hawaii out there recently. I think my pecking order, Nevada's dead last, but I think UNLV and Hawaii are pretty neck and neck for that fourth spot in the West Division. Mm-hmm. And I probably should be not foolish and pick Hawaii at home, but I don't know, something tells me the Rebels will, they kind of, not that it's where they don't necessarily surprise teams, but they kind of did last year being close to really good teams. And so I think this is another game where it's evenly matched at this point, assuming we don't talk injuries and whatnot, but we know who both teams are. And if Marcus Arroyo, he has the coaching edge for multiple years over Timmy Chang, who's never been an OC at any level, just like a position coach. I just have a gut. It's sort of a kind of a gut feeling where I think Hawaii will host this game. And going back to my other projection, going back to Warriors, they were losing. Both these teams will be coming on a massive losing streak coming into this game. And I just think UNLV, when we look at quarterback, I think Cam Frohl might be better than Brandon Traeger if he's a starter. Receiver-wise, Williams is the best receiver on the field compared to what Hawaii has at this moment, I'm thinking. And I just think Hawaii won't get it done. And UNLV's offense hopefully will be coming into their own a little bit to pass the ball a bit more, because they weren't bad throwing the ball last year. They moved the ball fairly well passing overall for the most part. For what I guess when I'm looking at Rebel standards, they weren't terrible. They showed pretty good. They had a kind of a big pendulum swing. I think that may even out and they'll be kind of going up a little bit more to maybe be what 60th, like the top seven, just outside the top half passing offense possibly. And that might be enough for Hawaii.
Yeah, I mean, I think personally, I'm probably a little more bullish on the Warriors than most, which is why I have this one penciled in as a loss for UNLV.
What about for Nevada Day when they host the guys from Reno, the Wolfpack?
I think they can paint the cannon red.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I mean, we talked about it a little bit in our Wolfpack podcast. I sort of have reservations about Nevada's ability to generate pressure just because they're replacing so much up front that, you know, even if the secondary plays up to its potential, you know, UNLV might be talented enough to be able to shift gears and sort of steal a win in this one.
I have it as Nevada loss, or excuse me, sorry, UNLV loss, apologies. But it's going to be a game where, even though I just mentioned like 10 seconds ago, Nevada is the worst team in the conference, and they get them at home, at least in the West Division. I just think here, this is a dumb reason I'm going with this, because I should really be flipping these two games where it should be Hawaii loss and Nevada win. Mm-hmm. But I think with Ken Wilson and what he does defensively as a defensive coach mindset coming from Oregon and being at Nevada before, I think his defense will shine where the offense brings, even, but the offense has some pieces like Toa Taua. That's probably the main offensive weapon they have, will be the biggest threat. I don't know, man. I just think Nevada's going to take care of business and their defense will be too much for the Rebel offense. It might be dumb to say, and I'm kind of, maybe I'm being contrarian or whatever, but I hate using gut feeling, but I just think when we look at the talent, they're not that, even though Nevada's probably going to finish last in the conference overall, I still think they have enough pieces and it's a rivalry game where they're going to want to get this game done. And Toa Taua is a good enough player to control this game, I think. And so I have a loss, and then but here's the bright spot for Rebel fans. This is 5-7 for me. They beat Nevada. For me, they go 6-6 and go to a bowl game.
Yeah, I've got them at 4-8, 2-6 overall.
In conference, yeah. I have them 2-6 in conference as well. But compared to what they did last year, if they double their wins, that's showing improvement. Because they're at the point where they get to close losses, now they get convert those into victories. Mm-hmm. And the schedule, maybe I'm being a bit too optimistic beating Cal and North Texas, but I think when they play with Arroyo being around for a couple of years, I think he's kind of figured a few things out. You would hope he would. And maybe he can kind of make some of those adjustments when they're playing on the road at Hawaii, or they're going to show up versus Mexico and have no issues versus Lobos, who aren't going to be all that good. But I think the main sticking point for them to be really good is find a quarterback. Because that's the thing last year, they played multiple quarterbacks. If they have one guy who's healthy throughout the whole year, whoever it is, that'll go a long way to make the connection with Kyle Williams and the other receivers. Mm-hmm. And if the offense is about average a conference and the defense gets about 99th or better in any of those advanced numbers you mentioned, like points allowed per drive and SP plus defense or sack rate, all that stuff improves, or not sack rate. Yeah, I guess getting sacks, not sack rate. That's the offensive line. But if they improve what they're doing to be in the top 100, I think 5 wins is in the ballpark if they're a top 100 defense. And I don't think that's too unrealistic to ask for.
I mean, I don't think it's out of the question that they get to a bowl, but they have to answer like the majority of their questions with this sort of a resounding exclamation point in order to do that, I think.
So what's their overall, what's their biggest concern then? What's their biggest question mark, you think? The defensive line? Okay. I figured. Okay.
I would feel a lot better about this team if they had been able to keep Winman and I knew that Scott was healthy.
Oh, yeah.
Without either of those guys, it just feels a lot harder to project them for anything more than maybe 4 wins.
I will say this. You want to hear a surprise thing that could happen to them this year? I'm going to go on a limb and think, and I think they have a chance to beat San Jose State on the road, possibly. Just because look how, I know there's injuries last year, new quarterback, a couple new receivers. I know they got Fajoko and Cade Hall, but Spards are, I'm still kind of, maybe I'm being wrongly accusatory against them because how bad they've been. Because 2020, I don't think it's a fluke. And last year was more of injury unluckiness at quarterback and defensive guys not taking a step. But if Cade Hall plays like he did last year and not amazingly good, I could see Rebels maybe sneaking a win out there. Maybe. It's kind of a long shot, but that's one. Compared to the other teams, they're the next most likely to get a
victory. They almost did last year.
I know. Like, they're not beating Utah State. They're not beating Notre Dame. They're not beating San Diego State. Not beating Fresno State. Not beating Air Force. And Spartans could go, like, they could win 8 games. But I think that's a sneaky game we should watch for. If things go right for them, there's some potential for that to be a spicy game just like last year. So anything else to add for the Rebels here in Las Vegas?
I think we are all set.
All right. I pick 5-7. Matt picks them 4-8. We have 2 previews left, New Mexico, San Jose State. So check us out, MWR.com. We have a lot of previews, a lot of first look opponents. We're going to get a handful of things going up. Our top 50 countdown is in full swing. We are, 3 weeks away from college football, Matt? Week 0?
That is correct.
3 weekends, we'll be back for college football. So we have a couple shows left. Also throughout the whole season, at least 2 shows a week. And, yeah, just check us out, MWR.com, and we'll be back next time. Check the feed. Multiple shows this week to play a little catch-up with me being sick and out of town. So we'll be back shortly to preview the final 2 teams.